Sairam, dear listeners, this is Arvind from Team Radio Sai, enjoying the privilege and honor of welcoming all of you for another segment of a lovely afternoon satsang. Well, this week is going to be a bonus satsang, if I may call it so, because, you know, for almost 2 weeks now, Prem and myself, yes, Prem is here joining me, Prem and myself have been promising the listeners that we will discuss about an amazing series of events that took place at Karur, where Bhagwan delivered his first ever public discourse. But somehow or the other, definitely it is Swami's will, it has got postponed. And even last week when we thought of narrating about this, we had a surprise visitor, an amazing visitor in Mr. Nagaraj, who relived some of the most beautiful moments that he and his family had spent in the divine presence of Swami in the 1940s. And therefore we felt that it would be injustice to our listeners if we postpone it by another fortnight, and that is why we decided to have a bonus afternoon satsang on Satyam Shivam Sundaram, so that we can finally reach Karur and attend Bhagwan's first public discourse. But before that, let me offer my most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet and welcome Prem to the satsang. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind, and sairam to all listeners. Yes, it's that momentous occasion when Swami gave his first discourse, and you know, I was just trying to figure out how many discourses we have of Swami now, and it's very heartening to know that only Radio Sai has at least 1500 recordings of Swami's discourses, and there are thousands more outside there which need to be gathered. And in fact, even the Satya Sai Speaks, which is definitely not the most comprehensive collection of Swami's discourses, has about 1900 to 2000 discourses recorded.
Okay.
And I think it's needless to say that many of these discourses which was there in the late 40s and early 50s wouldn't have been part of that collection.
Correct.
So to imagine so many thousands of discourses that Swami must have given.
And you know, Prem, we usually associate it, because we are humans, we always like to associate numbers, you know. What was Swami's message in the 100th discourse? What was his message in the 1000th discourse? So, because there have been so many discourses that have gone unrecorded, it becomes difficult to catch the 100th discourse or the 1000th discourse. But it's definitely possible to get the first ever recorded public discourse, and that makes it thrilling, you know, because it was the first. But before that, Prem, you know, I was just thinking about a speciality of the Sai avatar. Of course, you know, when we discuss about Sai avatar specialities over the other avatars, we come across many specialities. In fact, the Satya Sai avatar is possibly the only avatar to have won such recognition and people becoming aware that the Lord is in their midst, even when the Lord was in their midst. No other avatar before enjoyed such a thing, or maybe, let me put it the other way. None of the devotees before enjoyed this privilege that we have enjoyed of having been given the opportunity to recognize the Lord when He is in our midst. But that apart, you know, I was thinking from the angle of Swami's life story, because that is what we are talking now. I think Swami's avatarhood is so special because it has been documented by multiple people. Different people from different walks of life, from the rich to the poor, from those who are suffering, from those who are spiritually oriented, from those who are materialistically oriented. Different people have written their accounts and captured Swami's story, which therefore gives us the opportunity to get such a deep as well as such a rich diversity, which the other avatars didn't enjoy. For example, if you take Ramayana, we have only Valmiki's account. The other accounts which we have of Tulsi, or even the latest being our own dear Professor G. Venkatraman's account, they are all based on, you know, flashbacks. I mean, it's not a live account.
Contemporary.
It's not a contemporary account. In the same way, when it comes to Krishna, we have only Vyasa. But when it's Sai, we have so many, right? That is a definite speciality that we enjoy.
Right, and it's endless. And in fact, even as we are speaking here, I think one such recording is going on in Anantapur. We are recording one of the very old devotees whom we have spoken about, in fact, in this very series. And I think even as we are talking to you now, a recording of that elderly devotee.
Yes, Mrs. Subbaratnamma, who had the privilege of being with Swami when the collar pin dropped. Mrs. Subharatnamma and her brother Narasimha Das,
right,
who were the children of Sri Anjaneyalu, the excise commissioner.
Swami,
yes,
made the final declaration and sang Manasa Bhajire.
Thanks to Mr. Nagaraj, we got to know these two elderly devotees who are really elderly now and who are now in Anantapur, and our team is right now at Anantapur recording and capturing those moments directly first hand. So that's another good news.
And that's the beauty, not only in the form of literature, not only in the form of word, but we have even been fortunate to capture them digitally. Some of the devotees whom we have had the opportunity to record and whom we are looking forward to record many more of them. That's also an advantage, you know. You can see them, especially some of the devotees who have done. Mrs. Vijayamma, the Anita Sharanam Nasti, author of that book. You could see those scenes coming alive in her eyes when she's narrating those beautiful incidents of the Dashara she's been a part of and the Chitavati session she's been a part of. I think that's the advantage also we have. Technology has given us that edge over all the other ages.
Really, Prem. Because, you know, just the other day I was passing by Yajur Mandir. And for a moment, I just stood there and stopped my bike. I don't know, I felt some kind of attraction. I just stood at the gate and I was just reminiscing all the beautiful moments that personally I had experienced at the Yajur Mandir gates. And there were so many in number. And at that time, you know, what struck me was when I had been to the other holy places, you know, like Badrinath, Kedarnath. Along the way, there are many places, you know, which people say that this is where this incident of the Ramayana happened. This is where this incident of the Mahabharata happened. You come across many such places. But that's where the detail ends, you know. They say that this episode happened. If you try to, you know, you try to go into more details as to how might it have happened? What would have been Krishna saying? What Rama would have been doing? There's nothing. There's nothing you can come up with. And I often put Swami in that position and imagine. If Rama had said this to Lakshmana, how he might have said. And the only reference I have is Swami, because that is the only God I have known. But when it comes to Swami, you know, I feel the future generation is blessed, because if at all somebody wants to go in depth and want to really build up a picture of what Swami would have said, the kind of words he would have used, the kind of language he had used, the speed at which he spoke, everything has been documented in some form or the other, and that is indeed a great blessing. Who knows in the future if somebody is able to create a 3D, you know, a 3D image and really recreate the whole darshan experience alive. We have enough DNA, DNA in the form of experiences, narratives and recollections through which we will be able to recreate it. And until such a time comes, we are able to do the same in our own hearts because of the details.
I should say I only partly agree with you, because one of the freshness about Swami was his unpredictability. You know, when we thought that we knew him, when we thought that we knew how Swami would react, Swami would react in a different way. In fact, I'm reminded of a beautiful analogy which Swami himself told one of the old devotees. He said, when you come to me, I am like that untamed horse, okay, and which is sitting silently, an untamed wild horse, but which is sitting quietly. So you'll come up to it and you'll say, it's a nice horse, it's looking so beautiful. And you'll come and stroke it and you'll think that, I can tame this horse. Okay, and the horse doesn't say anything. And it lets you mount it. It keeps quiet. And it even lets you ride it. It doesn't say anything. But when you think that now I have tamed this horse and I know how to ride this horse, the horse will become violent and it starts jerking you off its back. And then you'll say, no, I'm not yet controlled this horse. I don't know this horse completely. Then after a while, again the horse calms down. Then you'll think, now I know the horse better. Then again the horse will start jerking you and trying to push you out. And every time I'm like that horse which tries to jerk you off its back, but I'll also make sure that you don't fall away.
Okay, the considerate horse.
Right. And Swami said, I keep doing this because every time you think that you know me, I want to tell you that it is never possible to know me.
I'm reminded of the story of the sage who set out to learn everything in the Vedas. The Vedas are a thing that have come from God. In the sense, that way it is not primarily God, it is something that has arisen from God. And even while studying the Vedas, he seeks elongation of his life by 100 years, at the end of which, when he actually comes to know what he has studied is a mere pebble compared to the four hills that the Vedas are, he realizes that the Vedas can never be understood completely by anybody in their lifetimes. When that is of the Vedas, what to say of the Vedamata? the person who is the source of the Vedas. So yes, in that way, I definitely agree to what you say, Prem. We cannot understand because, as Swami used to always say, love my uncertainty.
Right, absolutely.
He takes me back to the Dasara of 1947.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is where we had left off our listeners last time, and it was actually after the Dasara of 1947 that the Karur discourse took place.
Right.
And it's so nice that we are speaking about the Dasara of 1947, almost 55 to 60 years after, 60 years after that, this is the Dasara of 2013. So it's nice that we speak about the Dasara of 1947. I was reminded of that Dasara because of an incident that took place which brings out, which highlights among many other things,
mm-hmm.
Swami's uncertainty. This is the experience of Sundaramma. You know, we spoke about Sundaramma, the devotee who came to Swami quite early.
Okay.
Yeah, and so, you know, during this time, Sundaramma's son, a little boy, mm-hmm. he got fever and the fever temperature was rising. And it was Dasara time, so she sought Swami's intervention in order to make the boy better. Swami, you know, like a doctor, gets a thermometer and he puts the thermometer in the boy's mouth to check the temperature.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, the boy crushes the thermometer with his teeth. He presses his teeth, clenches his teeth hard.
Okay.
The thermometer is crushed and the mercury empties onto his tongue. Mercury, as we know, is a poisonous metal. In fact, it led to that disaster known as the Minamata disaster in Japan because of fish
right.
taking mercury. I mean, basically
right.
just to highlight the fact that mercury is very poisonous. So, it goes from bad to worse because it was just a fever and now the boy has ingested mercury. And Swami puts his finger into the mouth of the boy and tries to take out the mercury and he succeeds in getting out some of the mercury, but some of the mercury has gone inside
okay.
and the boy becomes unconscious. Now when this happens, Sundaramma is very, very, very upset. And in fact, she even is angry on Swami. She says, Swami, he was fine till you came and thrust that thermometer into his mouth. Now he's become worse. Do something. Now something has to be done. But Swami becomes strangely quiet. He just walks. He just walks outside the mandir. Goes to the Tulsi Mantapam,
mm-hmm.
a place which has been built specifically for growing the Tulsi plant, and lays down there and apparently goes off into a sleep. The bhajans are going on, the bhajans conclude, the aarti is performed, Swami mm-hmm. has not woken up. After that, people don't know what to do, so they just shift Swami back to the room.
Okay.
After that, Swami comes out of his room only at 10 o'clock in the morning the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And when he comes out, he walks straight to Sundaramma and says, Sundaramma, your son is fine now. I have taken out the mercury. And then the people begin to realize, you know, where Swami had, because in this, they thought Swami was sleeping, but they knew that Swami was in a trance. They just didn't know what was happening because this was a common feature those days. That is when they realized that Swami had gone in a trance to treat Sundaramma's son of the mercury poisoning. But that was not it. Swami said, that is only one of the things that I did. I also visited such and such a devotee in Bangalore and he was crying and weeping. He wanted Swami's blessings. So I went and delivered fruits to him.
Oh.
But that was not all. Swami said, there was this other person and Swami said, I will not name him because his wife is sitting here. He had a severe stomachache and I went and helped him so that his stomachache can be cured.
Okay.
But later on, you know, Swami privately called the wife of one particular Raval Krishnamurti
mm-hmm.
and told his wife that, you know, your husband had this terrible trouble, he had a terrible stomachache, I went and helped him. So, you know, Swami said that these were three things that he achieved in one trance, you know, three transcorporeal journeys. And in fact, later on, this Raval Krishnamurti confirms, he says that he had a severe stomachache and his wife is not in town. Why? Because his wife has gone to Puttaparthi. He doesn't know what to do. At that time, there's a knock on the door and in comes his friend with a flask of coffee and says that, you know, I think you're having I just felt that you're not feeling well and maybe this coffee will help you. So he's amazed. He says, you know what, really I'm not feeling well, but I don't know how coffee will help me because I'm having a stomachache. He says, no, you have this coffee. He makes him drink almost half a flask of that coffee and leaves the remaining for him and leaves. By evening, Raval Krishnamurti is feeling much better. And so he goes to meet up his friend. He meets with him and he says, you know, thank you so much. What you did really helped me. Maybe that was the perfect thing that I needed then. The friend is just bewildered. He says, what are you talking about? He says, no, you came home and you delivered the flask of coffee and you stayed with me, you spoke to me, it felt so good. The friend just refused. He said, no, I didn't do any of the things what you're saying. I didn't get any coffee flask. By the time Raval Krishnamurti realizes what's happening, he understands and he sends a silent prayer of gratitude to Swami. But even before he sent that silent prayer of gratitude, Swami had already told the people there at home that, you know, this is what I had done previous evening at the mandir. So, you know, you can never predict the way Swami does. You know, there have been times when Swami has instantly cured a person. But here was a case where Swami chose to go into a trance and then heal him in the night. So Sundaramma's son got freed of his mercury poisoning. But why Swami did the way he did is something that we just appreciate it as the glorious uncertainties of the Lord and just enjoy his leelas. This was one incident that happened during the Dasara of 1947.
Just reminded of somebody who was giving a discourse on the life of Krishna, you know, the childhood period when he vanquishes many demons who come to him in various forms. One comes in the form of a snake, one comes in the form of a crane.
Hmm.
So at this point, you know, he makes this very point, very question which you are raising. You know, why Swami did that in that particular way? Why he did this? Hmm. Why did he kill that demon by tearing open the mouth? Why did he kill that demon by
sucking out the life? Yeah.
Yeah, in different ways. And he said, for this very purpose, because people like me can sit here and talk about the leelas of Krishna and you all can listen to it.
Otherwise, it will be just ditto, right, ditto, ditto.
If everything was done the same way, we wouldn't have this opportunity of Shravanam and Kirtanam.
Wow, that's a real beautiful devotee's answer. And I think that is the right thing, you know. If every cancer Swami had cured by just saying cancer cancelled, then what do we speak about? We just list out the names and say ditto, ditto, ditto. But each one is a beautiful story in itself, which we can live and relive so many times.
And that's what, you know, they say, most of these people who do kathas on Tulsi Ramayana, that's what they say, Hari Anant, Hari Katha Anant.
Hmm.
There is no end to how much you can speak about. And that's what we've seen, you know. One of the devotees whom we'll be talking about today, he says that the first time he comes to Swami...
Who is this?
Yeah, Mr. Balapatabi, you know.
Okay,
first time when he comes to Swami,
He's
being brought by his brother-in-law, who's just made one trip to Swami before.
Okay.
And in that one trip he has made to Swami, he has enough stories to keep them awake the whole night in that journey.
Hmm.
He's just telling those things which he has heard and which he has seen in that one trip. And he's saying he could keep us awake the whole night. That gives an idea of how much Swami was doing in those days.
And you know, I was also reminded with this incident of something that happened very recently.
Mm-hmm.
As late as 2009, I think, when Swami made a trip to Hadshi. You know, this Swami's transcorporeal journeys did not... I cannot say that they were restricted to only that period, because they have heard of the Bhopal incident where the revolver is with me. We narrated that. So different incidents we have narrated, but it continued even as late as 2009, because, you know, this is an incident narrated to, I'm sure you remember him, maybe he was your senior by 1 year, Mr. Vyomesh Thakkar.
Right, he was my senior by 1 year.
Right. So he narrated that how, you know, he was on his way from Pune to Bombay. This was when Swami left Hadshi and was going to Bombay.
Okay.
So he wanted to shift. He wanted to be in Bombay to receive Swami. So he was driving along in his car, and this was along the Pune-Bombay expressway.
Okay.
And when they were traveling in the car, his car was hit from behind by a truck.
Right. I'm aware of that accident. Yeah, it's quite a bad one. Yeah.
Yes, you remember that,
quite
right?
Early in the morning.
Early in the morning, he had along with him another passenger.
Right.
And the other passenger almost lost consciousness, while Vyomesh sustained terrible injuries. In fact, the worst was the steering wheel burying itself into his thighs and knees almost, which was in a very bad shape. He got out of the car, he could barely stand, he collapsed on the floor. And to make matters worse, you know, it's sad, the state of affairs, that 2-3 people whom he thought are coming to help him actually looted him, took away his purse and belongings and just left him on the road that way. And because it was an expressway where vehicles are moving at high speed, and because it is early in the morning where visibility is poor, two more such crashes happened where other vehicles banged into this car. But they were so scared that they just drove away, which worsened Vyomesh's situation. And he says that, you know, he was sharing, he said that the last he remembered was just Swami's name after things went blank. And when he opened his eyes, he was in a hospital. His legs had been bandaged, he had been treated to some extent. And his parents were there in the hospital at Pune, which really shocked him. He wondered, how did all this happen so fast? Because it was just the same day evening. So within 12 hours or 14 hours, how did so many things happen? Because it takes a few hours, about 4 to 5 hours for people to get from Bombay to Pune.
Mm-hmm.
And how did his parents who were in Bombay, how did they get to Pune? That was in his mind.
Okay.
And when he inquired from his father said that they got a call hours before saying that your son has been injured like this. This is a place where his accident has taken place.
Mm-hmm.
And within half an hour, the caller calls back again and he says that now you don't come to that place because he's now being shifted to the hospital. He's in the hospital. So, you can come to such and such a hospital.
Mm.
After that, he again calls and says that in case you are not able to find a transport, this is the place where you have to get a taxi. Get your taxi and come. All details are given by that person.
Mm.
And that is how they have landed here. And when Vyome says, who is that? I right now forgot a name. The person has given a name also.
Okay.
They go back to the call registry and use that number and call him back. You know, that number does not exist. They have not heard from that person ever since. He is a person whom Vyomesh believes got into the hospital. Because the doctor also says that a person got him to the hospital. But the doctor also knows no details. The same name the doctor also says. The same name the father also says. But that number doesn't exist. And that's it. With it, it's all over. So you know, as Vyomesh was narrating this, he had tears of gratitude to Swami in his eyes. He says, because that accident changed my life. So I was shocked when he said that. How can an accident change your life? It means I thought maybe because this was an experience where he could feel Swami's omnipresence and omnipotence. He said, yes, that is one aspect. But the other thing is, he said, I was 92 kilos. And I had to undergo 3 surgeries. And when the doctor came up for a 4th surgery, I didn't want it because my leg was being cut like vegetables. You know, I had to put rods for support, then rods had to be removed, then something else, muscle has to be strengthened. The doctor said, there is no other option for you but to go for surgery. He said, why doctor? The doctor said, the only other option is, you lose weight. How many? How many kilos? 30 kilos. And you are not allowed to exercise because your legs are not in any condition.
Right.
Only through diet can you lose 30 kilos. He said, that was when I prayed to Swami and I said, doctor, I will do it, but please don't operate anymore. Don't keep cutting me so many times. And he says, with that inspiration, in a span of 5 months, he lost 30 kilograms. From 92, he came down to 62. And today, he is driving the car. In fact, I heard this whole story when we were driving 500 kilometers to a district south of Karnataka recently. And he was driving. He did the whole journey. Absolutely fit, fine. And he says, my life, everything has changed. I've lost my weight. I've become much more better. So many things have changed. And he is grateful to Swami for the accident and for taking care of him in such a beautiful manner. So, you know, Swami has his own reasons why he allows some things to happen, why he allows an accident, why he allows a mercury poisoning, and why he does things in different ways, as you beautifully put it, so that we have different leelas to discuss about.
And that's the beauty, you know, if you look at the human body itself, you know, why are we living right now? It is because we breathe in the air. And we have the ability to take only what is good in the air, what is necessary for us. We take in the oxygen and leave out. This very incident you narrated, imagine he could have questioned, why did you let the accident happen to me? Mm. But he was grateful for the help which came after that.
Mm.
I think in our life, every time when Swami comes to help us, it is the same Swami who has permitted that wrong thing or that unpleasant thing to happen in our life. After which he came to help us.
Hmm.
But I think those who give gratitude for the help which came and don't blame Swami for the problem which came, they are the ones who actually benefit and grow from that incident. So I think, and I think that's the speciality of humanness itself. Because why are we a superior species to most of the other animals in the world? Because we can pick out what is right for us and we can discard. You know, we can pick what is the right food, right nutrients from the things and discard what is not necessary for us.
Correct. And as you rightly put it, it's very important that we have the ability to do this for all our life experiences also.
Absolutely.
Because when we question, why is Swami doing this? You know, the answer that struck me, I don't remember how exactly this answer arrived to me, but the answer that struck me is the difference between divine love and human love. You know, human love, if I say I love you and I want to see you happy, so how do I make you happy? Anything that I do which makes your mind and body happy, I feel is making you happy. But divine love is not like that. Divine love always concentrates on the progress of the soul. And sometimes for the progress of the soul, the suffering of the mind and body is necessary. And when such a thing happens, where for the progress of the soul, the mind and body are made to suffer, we feel that God is being cruel. Because our limited, narrow, petty love depends only on how happy the body and mind is. Sometimes we do not realize that is what happens, right, in pleasures and other things, where the body and mind may seem to be happy, but the soul is being pulled into the dark corners. The Lord comes with divine pure love for the uplift of the soul. So we will be able to see the positive the way Vyomesh did and the way we all devotees should, if only we are interested in divine love, and when if we have this faith that the divine love will always make my soul progress irrespective of what's happening to my body and mind.
And having said that, that happens only when you know the value of spiritual progress over the well-being of the body.
Correct.
And
correct.
I think that's the thing which Swami keeps doing side by side, you know, apart from giving you the experiences which will endear you to him, he's also giving you the spiritual wisdom that you're not just the body. And I think it goes hand in hand.
He gives us the message that you're not a body with a soul, you're a soul that has just taken on this body, and bodies may be many. It's the soul that is important. Really, the soul is the sole purpose of life. That is what Swami keeps harping upon. And in fact, that was one of the most beautiful points that Swami made during his first discourse at Karur. We shall come to that maybe after a little break.
Swami.
Back after that break, I think we've kept our listeners waiting a bit too long for that first discourse. So, yes, Arvind, let's dive in and go to that first discourse at Karur.
Yes, okay. Well, how this came about is devotees from Karur had actually come for Dasara during 1947. And during the Dasara celebrations, that is when they forced Swami and said, Swami, you must come to Karur, you must come to Karur. And good news for them, Swami agreed. And that was how it happened. October 24th, as we spoke in the two satsangs, as we spoke in the satsangs before the last one, that is, the two satsangs before, Swami actually went and, you know, granted the ultimate boon to Sulochana, daughter of Ranjot Singh. We spoke about that. That was October 24th. October 25th, Swami moved to Karur. And it was a phenomenal experience because this was going to be a kind of a public appearance, a public darshan or something like that, which was happening for the first time outside Puttaparthi. Yes, when Swami used to visit Bangalore or other places, there used to be some gatherings, but what was planned at Karur was something unimaginable in those days. So, in fact, just imagine, they got a special vehicle made so that Swami's journey to Karur can be comfortable. Oh. A chassis of a vehicle was bought from the Edison and Company. From the company called Edison and Company, which exists even to this day. It's, I think, some amalgamation company in Chennai. It's a big company, and they brought a vehicle, they bought a vehicle chassis and specially constructed a vehicle which with comfortable seating to take Swami to Karur. And Swami's host at Karur was a certain Raj Gopal Chettiar and his entire family, and they awaited him. They had a two-story house, and Swami was on the upper story. The idea was the balcony can be used by Swami to give darshan. Now, you know,
if anybody is wondering if they have anything to do with the Karur Vaishya Bank, I think some of the people who hosted Swami were from that family. Which started the Karur Vaishya Bank.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's news even for me. That's wonderful. So, one interesting thing happened, you know, when Swami went to Karur, a group of rationalists, so-called rationalists, you know, who try to prove that God doesn't exist, God is nonsense, God is rubbish, all these things, and their goal is to create a kind of havoc and panic and try to, you know, disprove all this. They take pride in that.
Okay.
And they have their own following. So a group of rationalists wanted to camp at Karur in order to, you know, attack Swami. Attack Swami verbally and through their challenges. Now the host didn't want all this. So, the minute he came to know of this, he didn't get Swami directly to his house. He took him off to a Rama temple in the outskirts of the town. And he said, Swami, let's have one session here only. So, he avoided, you know, he avoided that kind of a confrontation. Yeah, I think it's bad luck for the people. They could not even see Swami, the rationalists. And it was only after they had left that in the evening, he got them home. So, once he got Swami home, there were huge crowds that began to gather. That was when actually the news spread that Swami has come. Till then they did not. Because, you know, in those days itself, they realized the wisdom of when it comes to Swami, until it actually happens, do not, you know, do not. Because Swami's timing, we never know. Swami says, tomorrow we will do it, I will give it. But we don't know the exact timing because he's Kala Kala Yanamaha, Kala Tita Yanamaha. So they had not announced at all. They had said that we wish to bring Swami. They had not announced that they're getting Swami. The minute Swami landed, they said, yes, now Swami is in Karur. And huge crowds gathered. So much so that, you know, they were all pining and thirsting for Swami. And when Swami came to the balcony, he saw that there was a huge crowd. And he wanted, so he said, I will go down and interact with them. They had set up a separate platform on which they wanted Swami to be. But Swami said, no, how can I be on the separate platform comfortably when all of you are struggling so much? I will come down and be with you. They said, no, Swami, you know, the crowd, by then itself, such a mass appeal Swami had. They all shouted, no, Swami, please, you be on stage, please. Don't come. It's not right that you get inconvenienced. Swami said, nothing doing. What suffering you are going through, the same should be for me. I am no special. That was when an intelligent devotee maybe, you know, brought up an argument saying, Swami, if you come down, all of us will not be able to see you.
Okay.
Please, Swami, please be on stage. When that argument was put, that was when Swami agreed and remained on the stage. You know, it is so beautiful and poignant in its message. Swami never does anything for himself. It's always for the devotees. He did not stay on stage because it's comfortable for him. The only reason he stayed on stage and continued to be there throughout his life after that also was only because when he's on stage, people can see him better. In fact, that is what happened, right? Even in Kulwant Hall, people used to say that, you know, once Swami shifted from walking to the wheelchair, it became tough to see Swami. And that's why for the sake of the people, a new one-foot stage was constructed in the Kulwant Hall.
Seen better. In fact, you know, that was one thing which Swami used to tell about giving special audience to VIPs also.
Hmm.
When many of these ministers or royalty come, Swami would call them and give them a thing, and when that, maybe somebody felt why special preference has been given for them. Swami said, I just call them, speak to them so that they can leave, so that they don't inconvenience the other devotees with their entourage.
That happens, right? You know, when the Prime Minister was coming during the convocation, they had 3 days of practice, the police, because of which for 6 hours, all traffic and all roads in Puttaparthi were blocked for no apparent reason, because it was a police drill. I mean, a VIP visit is invariably a lot of inconvenience, and as you rightly said, Swami would try to finish the interview and dispense with them soon so that the devotees are not inconvenienced. And that was how Swami remained on stage in Karur that day. And then the discourse that day, you know, Swami started off with his childhood.
Mm-hmm.
It is so beautiful because the first public discourse that Swami gave, Swami spoke about his life. And you know, the reason behind why we have started even this Satyam Shyam Sundaram is because his life is his message. Often just knowing the stories of Swami is enough to learn what is Swami's life message. And so Swami began to narrate all his childhood stories, and they say that many people in the crowd were moved to tears because the Lord whom they were worshipping just 4 years back was being treated in such a harsh manner, had led such a harsh life. So they were in tears. And then Swami continued to speak about what was his goal for every person. And the most striking statement that Swami made there is, your body has been given for the sake of society. Give your body for the society. But remember, your heart is not to be given to the society. Your heart is meant only for God. So that was a central theme around which Swami spoke, dilated, that give your body for society, give your heart to God. I feel that is such a powerful, simple message. It also, you know, is like hands in the society. You are born in society. You have to work for society. But let your heart be a single seat sofa in which only the Lord is seated. Having spoken all this, Swami then said, if anybody has questions, I am ready to answer. Now, people were taken aback because this was not expected. And later on, they found out that indeed there were those rationalists, you know, who had come to challenge and question Swami and create a problem. They had come with a set of questions, but surprisingly, they did not get up to ask the questions. Something had happened, a transformation had set in their hearts. They were just so touched by Swami, by whatever. I mean, nobody knows whether it was the discourse or whether it was the darshan or whether it was the people pining for Swami and Swami's pining for the people. They just refused to ask any question. They said, no, we have no questions to ask. But Swami made that statement because of which everybody got to know that there were indeed these rationalists who had come with the questions. So when there were no questions that were asked, Swami then walked back to the host's house, climbed back to his balcony, came out to the balcony so that now everybody could see him better, and then sang bhajans, which people followed down. He asked for a microphone was shifted up, and from there Swami sang bhajans, and the whole place reverberated with those bhajans. That was the memorable first public discourse which Swami delivered at Karur.
Beautiful. Even as you were describing that question answer session, which didn't happen. You know, the famous adage which goes describing God, it says, Mukam Karoti Vachalam. You know, the God can make the dumb speak. But here was a thing of the opposite, you know. The eloquent can be made speechless by the Lord. And in fact, Swami did the other also. Mukham Karoti Vachalam also happened in that Karur visit.
Oh, okay.
Because during that Karur visit, when Swami was going around giving darshan, Swami picked up one girl who had come with her father, not a very well-off person. And Swami went up to this girl and started asking her, what is your name? And it's a very small 7-year-old girl. And her father came forward to answer, because that girl was dumb actually from birth.
Oh, okay.
But Swami wouldn't even look at her father. Swami continued his conversation with the girl, and Swami was going on asking her, what is your name? And to the utter shock of her father, the girl looked at Swami and said, Swami. She addressed Swami in words.
Okay.
She said, Swami. And then Swami went on to ask, what is your name? And that girl told her name. Swami asked her, what is your father's name? She said told her father's name. And she answered a barrage of questions from Swami. And Swami, and then her father said, Swami, she's been dumb from her birth. And Swami said, she's no more, and blessed her. So imagine in that same visit, Swami was making
somebody, the eloquent speechless and the dumb to speak.
Right.
You know, when you spoke about the little girl, I was reminded that when Swami came down from the balcony, from his room, when he came down to his host's home, he found out that Rajgopal Chettiar's granddaughter was crying incessantly. Apparently she had some sort of an ear infection, because of which it was paining and she was going on crying. So they did not know what to do. There were crowds gathered outside. They did not know where to get the doctor from. So Swami said, don't worry. Waved his hand, materialized Vibhuti and put it in water and told the girl to take it. And with that, she was cured of her ear infection. So this also Swami is doing. But before that, you know, one more interesting thing that I forgot. After Swami completed his bhajan singing in the balcony, you know, he saw that on an opposite balcony, there was a photographer who was standing and taking pictures. And Swami said, hey, stop. So the photographer wondered why Swami was telling him to stop. Swami said, what are you clicking? Because there is no film in your camera. Please remind me, Prem, in case I forget, that this was the incident that I'm leaving. Because I was reminded that, you know, on many occasions, Swami, when I was shooting photos, Swami used to say, hey, camera mein roll hai, Swami said, film hai? He used to ask, do you have film in the camera? I said, yes, Swami, it is there. And okay, Swami, la battery hai? Yes, okay, good. So, when the digital age came.
Exactly, I was about to say that. You continue.
Yeah. So, when the digital age came, one day Swami asked, camera mein film hai? He asked. I said, meaning Swami asked, do you have film in the camera? I said, no, Swami, there's no film in the camera, because there was no film. Immediately, Swami didn't allow me to proceed at all. Swami said, dekho. What a foolish fellow. He doesn't put film in the camera and he's simply taking photos. So I wanted to explain to him that, you know, there's a memory chip and... But Swami didn't give me a chance at all. A few days later, once more Swami, you know, out of the blue just called me. I was sitting in the crowd with the students. Swami just asked me, hey photographer, do you have film in the camera? So this time I didn't want to get caught like last time. So I opened up the camera, pulled out the memory card. It was an SD card. And showed it to him and said, Swami, card is there, Swami, card. Swami said, film unda, is there film? I said, no, Swami, card is there. Swami said, sit down. And then Swami said, see, I told, still no use, still no film in the camera. And Swami continued. I mean, if Swami chooses that he does not want to understand what you're saying, what can you do? It was a nice joke. Everyone laughed. I also enjoyed. So I was recollecting this when I was reading this episode, where Swami asked the photographer, why are you taking photos? There's no film in your camera. And for this photographer, you know, this person immediately opened up his camera, which is a dangerous thing to do, because the film can get exposed. But because Swami said it that way, he opened it, and guess what? There was no film in the camera. And he was shocked, because he remembered that he had loaded the film, and how is it that the film has disappeared? And there Swami waves his hand, materializes the film roll, and throws it across for the photographer and says, put it in and then now shoot. So the people got so thrilled, they also started clamoring for something. And Swami waved his hand, materialized peppermints, talismans, many things, lockets, and threw them down to the crowds. And you know, the way Swami used to throw chocolates and all of us used to jump up and catch, in the same way all the devotees jumped up, many people got many things. And that was a reason, you know, we can say that, you know, Swami's popularity also began to rise, because people said, wow, amazing. We can get back some memorabilia or some kind of talisman or some kind of remembrance of having met Swami. So more and more people began to gather. And that was when Swami, you know, was now invited to Udumalpet.
Right.
From Karur.
even as these people went from Karur to visit Swami and invite him, Mr. Balapatabi, he was from Udmalpet, a person who came to Swami in 1944.
Mm.
So he went and requested Swami to come to Udmalpet, because Udmalpet is about, I think right now if you see, it's about 3 hours drive from Karur.
Okay.
In those days it might have taken much longer.
Mm.
So he said, Swami, I would be very happy if you would visit Udmalpet and visit my house too. And of course, I think he didn't expect Swami to agree, but Swami agreed readily. Swami said, yes, I'll come. And that's how Swami made that visit to Udmalpet. And after Swami came to Karur, Balapatabi goes back to Udmalpet, and there again he gets a special vehicle for Swami. Of course, it's not a specially modified vehicle. It's a brand new vehicle that one of the truck owners in his town has just bought.
Okay.
So he goes and requests him for that truck, saying that, you know, I want to bring Swami to our town, and he readily gives, and that's how he comes to Karur to...
So it's a mini truck or a van?
Right,
thing.
It's something like a matador, you could say.
Oh, okay, okay, you a know, van.
Yeah, the, enough space for the people sitting
van.
Behind. Right.
Huh.
So that's how it happens. He comes to Karur and picks up Swami. And along with Swami comes Sakamba, the coffee puddy Sakamba.
Coffee estate, huh? Yes.
Right. And Mr. Balapatabi and one more relative of his.
Mm.
So they come, and in the way they stop at one place, and the driver very, very worrisomely looks at the petrol tank because there's very less petrol. And as it's happened so many times before, Swami says that, tell him not to worry. He doesn't need any petrol to take me. And that's what happens. Swami goes to this Udmalpet and goes to Balapatabi's house. And there, they've I think around 11 or something in the morning, they reach there. So lunch is ready. So he requests Swami to have lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Swami says, yes, of course, I'll definitely have lunch. And so they bring all the silverware.
Okay.
And that's when Swami says, no, I don't want to have in silver plate and the silver vessels.
Mm-hmm.
Serve me on a banana leaf.
Okay.
And so Swami sits down and they put a banana leaf and Swami starts eating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Sakamba actually comes in. Sakamba tells Balapatabi's wife, I'm really surprised that Swami is sitting and having food.
Mm-hmm.
Because Swami never readily accepts an invitation to have food. Swami is very fussy about food.
Okay.
And I'm really surprised that Swami is having, and Swami is eating quite sumptuously.
Hmm.
And Swami gave her a very cold stare and said, what are you saying like this? This is my house.
Oh.
Why should I feel shy to have food here?
And so blessed indeed is Balapatabi.
You can imagine how thrilled they were to hear that.
Hmm.
But then after Swami had this food, Swami did a very weird thing. Swami folded that banana leaf with which he had that food, came out of the house, and showed one particular spot, and he said, you dig a pit here.
Okay.
And Swami said, bury this banana leaf there.
Oh, the banana leaf on which
on
he had had
Swami
food.
Had food.
Mm.
Swami said, bury it here. And it was covered. And Swami, I think, materialized some vibhuti, placed it on that spot. And then Swami materialized a tulsi sapling.
And Swami materialized said, a sapling?
Yes, materialized a tulsi sapling.
Okay.
And had it planted there. And Swami said, worship it.
Okay.
And then Swami went, and I think Swami took rest for a while. They had specially made beds and pillows for Swami. So Swami is taking a rest for a while. Then Swami came back, and this time what Swami did was came to that spot where he sat and had that food.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami said, draw a kolam here, rangoli.
Oh, okay, a rangoli, a pattern on the floor.
Yes,
yeah,
on
the drawing.
Floor. And Swami again materialized vibhuti, materialized some precious gems, put it on that spot. And then Swami said, install that Rama statue which I gave you here.
Oh, Swami had given him a Rama
statue. Yes, and that has a big story too.
Oh,
the Rama
okay.
statue. A very interesting one. Maybe we will divert from Karur and go back to Puttaparthi where Swami gave him that Rama statue.
Huh.
During one of the times when Swami was in Chitravati Sands, you know, Swami was with all the devotees, it was during the Dashara time, just the Dashara preceding to that Karur visit. Swami made a mound of sand, and from there he pulled out this 4-inch statue of Rama holding the bow.
Kodandarama.
And he gave it to Balapatabi. And he held it in his right hand. And just when that materialization happened, Swami sang the song that Rama is born and Lanka is going to burn. Telugu song. Okay. And even as Swami did that, they realized that one of the tents which were put up by the devotees went up in flames.
Oh, okay.
And immediately everybody ran and got up to put off the flame. Swami also got up and went towards that tent, you know, to put off the flame. He realized that he couldn't get up because this 4-inch statue which Swami materialized was so heavy that Balapatabi could not get up.
Wow, what was it made of? Osmium?
I don't know what it was. And he said it was so heavy, he couldn't get up. And not only could he not get up, the other devotee with him was trying to help him out. Even he got stuck in the place trying to pull him up.
Okay.
You know, so both of these people were rooted there, and all the other devotees ran towards the tent to put off the flame. And I think Swami just waved his hand that the flame was taken care of. So Swami came back, and then Swami realized that Balapatapi is still sitting there. So Swami just stroked that statue again. And instantly it became lighter. How heavy a 4-inch statue should be. So then Balapatapi could get up.
Just a pause here, Prem. I mean, I feel if we actually relive through this episode, it is so phenomenal and so fantastic. We can't imagine. 4-inch means it might be the size of a cell phone, right? An object the size of a cell phone is able to weigh you down and you're not able to get up. I mean, that is something really supernatural and divine, because even if we take osmium, osmium is supposed to be the densest material on earth.
Okay.
Even osmium of that size will not weigh so much. It might be thrice or four times as heavy as an iron bar of that size.
Mm-hmm.
And an iron bar of that size, if you make it four times heavier, I don't think it has the capacity to weigh you down. I mean, many of these incidents, we narrate it and we just, you know, maybe it just touches the surface of our minds and intellect and goes away. But if we really ponder deeply on it, every single such instance is enough to prove Swami's divinity. I mean, we don't need to discuss 10-15 miracles, just this one single thing. And the ability to just stroke out its density. I mean, just a touch and it's back to light, lightweightedness. This is no illusion or anything like that.
Absolutely. And, you know, as you were saying, people might claim that the statue was buried there before and Swami went to that very same spot and pulled it out. But how can you explain this super dense statue and then it becoming absolutely normal weight with a stroke of his hand? And as you said, these are the things which definitely is beyond reason.
And I think it goes back to the point we discussed during the last satsang, or maybe the one before that, that Swami always gives ample opportunities for the one with faith and for the doubter too. So both can be happy. The doubter can say that, therefore this is the doubt. The person with faith can say that, therefore this is the point of faith. I think that is the Maya aspect of Swami. And it is up to us to choose whether we are on the doubter's side or on the faithful side.
Right. And in fact, that is what Swami says, that faith is actually not built on experience. You know, it just has an experience to narrate, but faith stands on its own. And I think even detractors also is the same thing. You know, it's not on any reason. I think anybody who claims that Swami's miracles are not true will not have any argument to stand against these things which we are narrating here.
But just their conviction that it's not true, that's
right. They just feel that there's something, some part of it undocumented, or there must be something more to it. So I think it's no point speaking about that. Coming back to the statue, you know, in the meanwhile, when Swami went and put off the flame of that tent and came back, this person who was with Balapatapi, one Mr. Vishweshwar Rao, he said, "Hey, look, there's something very suspicious about this statue which Swami has materialized."
With its creation itself?
Right. The moment it comes into being,
it destroyed something.
There's
there.
Some destruction somewhere.
Uh-huh.
It seems to be, he didn't say it's unholy or anything like that. He said it seems to be a very, very potent statue. And maybe not everybody will have the ability to have it worshipped the right way. So he said it would be best to return it to Swami. You know, don't have any desires on it. Return it to Swami if Swami permits you. So meanwhile, Swami comes back, and that's when Swami, you know, makes the statue lighter.
And as you were narrating the other episode where Swami says get the Rama statue, so therefore we already know that he was not able to return it to Swami.
Right. So how what happened and why he couldn't return it to Swami, that's an interesting thing. So he goes back, he tells his wife the events which happened. So the wife also is a little scared, you know, with this statue. But they don't say anything, they have their dinner, they go back to sleep. But they're not able to go to sleep. You know, they're worried about the statue. Will they have the ability to take care of the statue the way it has to be? So in the middle of the night, you know, both of them, husband and wife, wake up. They go sit outside Swami's room. And it's so
late. In the 40s?
Yeah, in the 40s.
Okay.
So it's too late. They don't even feel like knocking the door and disturbing Swami. They just sit outside Swami's room with that statue, hoping that if Swami comes out, they'll give it to Swami and say, that, "Swami, please have it." And without anybody telling Swami, without anybody knocking the door, Swami opens the door and comes out. And Swami says, "What is it? What is it? Why are you not able to sleep?" And Balapatapi gives the statue to Swami. He said, "Swami, please take this back and I don't think I will be able to handle this. It's too potent for me. Then Swami tells him that what maximum is going to happen to you? You know, you're saying that it's inauspicious. What maximum is going to happen to you? You will die? That's all that can happen, right?
Oh, that's all.
Okay, and Swami goes on to say, are all your ancestors alive today? Are all your mothers and fathers and their mothers and fathers alive today? Then why are you scared of death? And then Swami goes on to say that your body and my body, all this have come, it has to go one day. He said, why fearing death should you give back something which is so special? And Swami said, this is going to help you in your spiritual progress, so keep it with you. So going back to that point where you said, you know, Swami is not somebody who just takes care of that body and the attachments of that body. Here was another incident of that. Swami saying that it might harm your body, but it's for your spiritual progress, so keep it. So I think this was, and this was the very same statue Swami was asking for, and Swami installed that statue in Balapatabi's house.
Okay, so he wanted to return it to Swami, and Swami went all the way to his house and ensured that it's installed over there.
But you know, his fears were not completely allayed, because after Swami had installed that statue, there was another incident which happened. One day when his wife was worshipping that statue, she was lighting a lamp, and that, you know, that matchstick fell on her sari, it caught fire. So that fear was always there, you know. And that's what he narrates.
So
you know,
they felt it was something like a jinxed thing.
Right. All through his experience, that's what he says, that they were dwindling between faith and worry. Whether, you know, should we accept Swami completely, or should we, things which were happening were scary. But I think that's what surrender can do, you know, even when you don't have faith. Even the other day, one of our friends were narrating, when he told Swami that, Swami, I don't have faith.
If you love me, it's enough.
If you love me, it's enough. I think that's the case with these people. They had immense love for Swami. You know, even when things were deterring them away from that, they had love for Swami. So the fear was taken care of and the faith was taken care of.
And that is what, you know, if we see, is what our scriptures say. You know, they say, have daiva preeti, papa bhiti. I mean, if you have daiva preeti, I think papa bhiti almost automatically comes in. And daiva preeti is the, that is love for God. Love for God and fear for sin. I mean, love for God helps you to have fear for sin and helps you overcome your fear of God. I mean, these people had ample opportunities to get scared of Swami because of the things that were happening in their life. But their love for Swami helped them overcome everything. And that is really a tribute or an ode that we should pay to these devotees who held on to Swami no matter what. In times when nobody recognized Swami also. That's really a great hats off to Mr. Balapatabi.
So there are a couple of other incidents which happened during that Udumalpet visit. Maybe we'll just take a short break. We'll come back to that incident which happens after this, this incident which we narrated now.
Shreera, Shama, Gana, Gana, Shreera,
After that beautiful bhajan, let's go back to Udumalpet.
A time when bhajans might have sounded just like these.
Maybe. But going by the description which Mr. Nagraj was giving us last week, He said these were all namas and kirtans.
Correct. These are not the bhajans.
These are not the bhajans. Bhajans were more of the Telugu songs which, like the one which you played in the previous break.
Yeah. Maybe today if it's played, it will be classified as a song and not as a bhajan.
Right.
And so yes, Prem, you were talking about Swami's visit to Balapattabhi's house.
Right.
And Swami has just now installed the Rama statue.
Yes.
And then what happened?
So this was sometime in the afternoon. So after all this was over, Again, just like in Karur, Udumalpet also, there were a lot of devotees who had by then gathered wanting to have Swami's darshan. Some of them managed to push all of them to Balapattabhi's brother's house, which happened to have a larger ground outside the house.
Courtyard, huh?
So Swami went and satisfied all the devotees there. And then Swami went to Balapattabhi's brother's house. And there they performed Pada Puja for Swami. You know, that worship of Swami's feet. They had the Ganga water in their house. They used that to perform Swami's Pada Puja. And at the end of the Pada Puja, Balapattabhi took a coconut to go outside the house and break it. And you know, that's one of the offerings you make when you do Puja.
And
right?
It's considered auspicious also.
Yes. So when Balapattabhi went out to break the coconut, Swami called him back and he said, no, you don't have to break the coconut. Swami takes the coconut from him and draws a line with his forefinger right in the middle of that coconut.
Like the equator of the coconut.
Yeah, exactly. Across the equator of the coconut. And the coconut breaks into two equal halves.
Oh, without any... Oh my God, okay.
It just opens up and the water in it is not spilling.
Okay.
It just opened up and then Swami materializes nine small statues, Navagraha statues.
Oh, these are the nine planets which are supposed to influence everybody's destinies.
Right.
Okay.
So, golden statues, nine Navagraha statues, Swami materializes and stuffs it into this coconut.
Okay. In the water he places them.
Yeah, into that...
kernel, in the shell.
Yeah, in the shell of this one, coconut. Stuffs it inside and it's first of all a wonder how Swami broke that coconut, no wonder how Swami materialized that, and it's a greater wonder how all those nine statues
fit into
that coconut. Then after Swami did that, Swami again closed the coconut, again ran his forefinger across that line, and that coconut was whole again.
Sealed back.
Sealed.
Okay.
And then Swami pulled out the handkerchief from Balapattabhi's shirt, tied that coconut in that, and gave it to him, and he said, you take it to your house and bury it under the third door in your house.
Oh my God.
You know, those days the houses used to be like, there used to be a row of doors, right? You will have the first entrance door, then you would go to the next door which will lead to the inner chamber. They will all be in one row.
Mm-hmm.
So Swami said, bury it under the third door in your house. So immediately Balapattabhi gave it to his wife and said, you keep it safe, we'll put it later.
So, Prem, I was just thinking again and again on the same point that you brought up in the beginning, you know, when you said, why Swami does such a variety? It is just so that we can discuss about it and we can discuss how each one is different from the other, but all of them bring in the same message of love and divine grace. You know, when you were narrating this, I just felt many times, you know, when we're starting something, people say, I hope nothing inauspicious happens. And in the Indian languages it is said that hope the Navagrahas don't bother. I mean, that is why every temple, be it of any god, in one corner there is also a Navagraha temple. Which is like, you have to get God's grace, but also, you know, appease the nine planets so that they do not bring up any obstacles in your path. But you know, Swami has time and again repeated in his discourses, when you have God's anugraha, which is God's grace, what can the Navagraha do to you? What can the nine planets do to you? And I feel this incident shows what Swami can do to the nine planets. I mean, he can just stuff them, drown them in water and put them in a coconut and bury them off. I mean, that is the power of Swami's grace. And if we win Swami's grace, we need not worry about, you know, bad luck or ill luck or anything striking, because whatever is happening in our life is for our good. I feel that is a very, that was a thought that came in my head when you narrated this incident of the coconut.
Very true. You know, but if you look at it in a different angle, as you're saying, when Swami's anugraha is there, what the Navagrahas can do. I think if we are in a position to accept whatever happens to us as God's anugraha, I mean, we will not be, the idea of going there in Navagraha is because there are a set of things which we want and there are a set of things which we don't want.
Correct.
But if we accept that whatever comes my way is what Swami is giving me and I have absolutely no choosing to do between the two.
Correct.
Then you will never turn to these Navagrahas and all that. I think that is a process which each one of us are going through, where Swami is making us that equanimous self.
And then, you know, yes, coming back to the story here, I remember reading about the experience of Kumaraswamy. Kumaraswamy was the driver who drove Swami from Karur to Udumalpet and Udumalpet back to Karur.
When Balapatabhi borrowed that van, he came with his driver.
Yes, the chauffeur came free.
Right, Kumaraswamy.
Yeah, now the thing is, this Kumaraswamy was an atheist. He did not believe in God itself. So, there was no way he was going to get even the least attracted to Baba and all this. So, he just did his job as a chauffeur. He did not bother what were the contents of the car. I mean, he did not worry about who were the passengers. Whoever it was, his job is to ferry and he gets paid for it. That's why he was doing it. One day, when he was standing in one corner by himself and he was smoking.
No, actually, this incident happened after the Udumalpet visit. Swami was driving back to Karur.
Yes, exactly.
In the evening.
Yeah, correct. It was on the return. Day, right. It's not during the drive from Karur to Udumalpet, but from Udumalpet to Karur. So he was smoking and standing by himself, and Swami goes to him, and Swami tells him to put away the bidi that he's smoking. So, out of respect for the master, because he is the one who has apparently hired the car, so he just throws it away. Then Swami asks him, "Do you like vibhuti?" So he says, "Why should I like vibhuti?" Anyway, Swami materializes some vibhuti for him.
But he says that only those who want to show off their devotion.
Exactly. Yes, thanks, Prem. Yeah, that's what he says. He says those who want to show off their vibhuti only show off their devotion put vibhuti. So Swami materializes vibhuti for him, and then Swami asks him, "Do you like vadas?" He says, "Who does not like vadas? Everybody likes vadas. Vadas is a kind of fried delicacy in South India, and it's really awesome to taste." I mean, both of us can personally vouch for that, right? So he says, "Who does not like vadas?" And Swami says, "Do you like your mother's vadas?" He says, "I have no mother." Because he had lost. Swami immediately smiles and tells him, "You mean to say you came without a mother? How can it be possible? You have a mother, and she used to make very tasty vadas." Now, you know, the driver, a blow strikes him, he just becomes silent. And Swami says, "Do you remember that incident when she was making vadas?" The driver has no recollection, and Swami starts narrating to him of how when he was just about 3 years old, when his mother was frying these vadas in oil, he goes and hugs his mother from behind. The mother is surprised and taken aback, and some of the boiling oil spills. And then he's still not recollecting when Swami suddenly grips his hand and presses at a spot. And then in that recollection he almost screams, because when he exposes his hand, exactly over there is a huge scar. And Swami says, "This is the scar that boiling oil made." And this was an incident that the driver himself had almost forgotten. And he had not shared it with anybody else. The minute Swami does this, he's on his knees. There are tears in his eyes. And in an instant, a staunch atheist has become a firm devotee of Swami. That is what happened to Kumaraswamy.
You know, that's the beauty. If you look at it, I think as a driver, he has driven a car which had less petrol, first of all.
Correct.
The way, and he's still driving it without petrol. And in fact, another incident happens when, before this, in a place called Dharapuram, on the way to Karur, Swami stops near a canal and Swami says, get me some water.
Okay.
So the driver takes a pot and goes to the canal, and the moment he dips the pot into the canal, the water dries up.
Okay.
So he's shocked and he comes back to say that there's no water there. Then Swami sends Balapattabhi. When he goes, the water is already flowing again.
Oh, okay.
So imagine he's witnessed all these things and he's heard definitely people talking about Swami. He's seen Swami make that dumb girl speak and all that. But it takes that personal touch to win your heart, isn't
it? That Swami has done to each one of us.
Right. And be it a cobbler, be it a driver, be it anybody, be it this business class, because all these were chettiars. The people who hosted Swami in Karur, Mr. Balapattabhi himself was a chettiar, and the royalty. I think Swami did it for everybody. There was no differentiation in that.
And as we know, the story of the driver does not stop with this personal touch.
Right.
Swami gave him another memorable personal touch, and I think you should narrate that.
Yes, and you know, after all this, in fact, that is what the driver tells Swami. He said, Swami, I've seen all this. I've seen this vehicle going without petrol. I've heard people talk all this. But, you know, now I just cannot deny you after what you've done for me. Because this incident which you're narrating to me, even I do not remember it. Mm. It was told to me by my elders. Because I lost my mother when I was 4 years old.
Mm.
And then after that, you know, it was the reason why Swami stopped the car then was that it was a very beautiful moonlit night and Swami wanted to take a walk in the middle of the journey.
Mm.
So Sakamma and Swami and Balapattabhi all are walking, and then comes back and that incident happens with the driver. Then Swami pulls out his license book. You know, nowadays you have a license card.
Mm.
Those days it used to be a small booklet.
A driving license, yes.
Yes. Uh-huh. So Swami pulls out that license book from his pocket.
Mm.
And Swami materializes a picture of himself. If a photographer was to take a picture right then, you know.
Oh, in the moonlit night?
In the moonlit light.
Okay.
The breeze blowing across Swami's hair and the hair flowing across Swami's forehead. Just exactly as that driver was seeing Swami, that picture was materialized. And Swami put it on that book just next to the driver's photo, and that photo stuck onto the license.
Oh, okay. Huh.
Something like a, you know, a memento for him.
Uh-huh.
So Swami folded the license, puts it back into his pocket, and then starts talking something. And suddenly Swami says, hey, I've forgotten to put the date and time in that photo. Swami takes back that book, opens that license, and touches the photo, and there the date of that occasion and the time gets printed.
Mobile inkjet printer.
You know.
And another beautiful aspect, Prem, in this story, you know, when it came out, when he says, I don't have a mother, and Swami says, do you think you came without a mother? I'm reminded of, maybe we can conclude on this note, I'm reminded of a statement that Swami made during the 50th birthday discourses in 1975. He said that the emperor of the land sent a lot of riches to Kabir Das. You know, the Kabir Das, the philosopher, poet and saint. Saying that, since you are an orphan, you know, Kabir Das, nobody knows who were his parents. He was brought up by foster parents.
Right.
So, since you are an orphan, please accept these riches. Use them for yourself. That was the way the king sent a message. And Kabir Das tells him, Swami is narrating this. He says, Kabir Das tells him that I am not an anatha. Anatha is the Sanskrit word for orphan. He says, I am not an anatha because I have anatha. And my natha is Rama. And then he says, Rama is an anatha because he has no natha. There is no lord for Rama, and therefore Rama, my lord Rama, is an anatha. He is an orphan. Go and give all these riches to him. And then Swami continues to tell in his discourse, how can anyone in the world be an anatha when I am there? Swami says, how can anyone be an orphan when I am there? If at all there is an anatha, that is only me. Because anatha means one who has no natha, or one who has no one above him to take care of him. And Swami says, I have no one about to take care of me. But when you have me, you can never call, and nobody in the world can ever be an anatha. And that is the blessing that all those devotees got. That is a blessing that we also have got. And we have to enjoy this to its fullest. And you know, going back to that story, when Swami did all this and returned back to Karur, there were devotees thronging because his story spread so fast and so furiously. I mean, Karur was crowded. In fact, it is recorded that the day Swami returned, mm-hmm. in the middle of the night, a group of devotees landed up and they started doing bhajans on the road outside the host's house.
Okay.
People would often come in the middle of the night and reserve their places,
mm-hmm.
you know, waiting for Swami to come for darshan. Because they wanted to have a good darshan and reserve their places. That used to happen in those days itself. And in the midnight when they started doing bhajan, the host came and requested them saying that, you know, do not disturb Swami. But to their great joy, in the middle of the night, in the balcony, there was Swami standing. And Swami said, I am not tired. They are tired, Papam. They have traveled so far. As long as they won't let them do bhajans, I will enjoy. And for 1 hour, in the middle of the night, Swami was with the devotees, interacting with them for bhajans. After that, blessed them. They were satisfied and then they went back home. In fact, it is said that in Karur, Swami would often walk on different parapet walls. So that all the devotees could have darshan on either side, you know. Walk across, because all the homes have a common compound wall. So the compounds are all connected. Swami keeps walking on the different compound walls and everybody on either side keeps getting darshan. So how much ever the devotees thirsted, that much the Lord thirsted to grant them and slake their thirst.
And you know, looking at all these beautiful stories, when Swami went to Karur, there were thousands. When he went to Udumalpet, there were thousands. Mysore, Bangalore, wherever he went, there were thousands. But an incident, I mean, something which keeps repeating in the narrative of all these old devotees is that not all could hold on. You know, many had to fall by the wayside. And that reminds us of the analogy which Shirdi Baba used to give.
Mm.
You know, when he was asked why devotees come and go, and he points out to that mango tree.
Correct.
And he says that, do all these flowers turn into mangoes? You know, so many thousands fall away.
So many are eaten by birds.
Right.
So many are dropped. Hmm.
So I think being mangoes or being those mango flowers, that's us. We cannot do anything to become mangoes. You know, there's nothing much we can do from effort but to actually pray to Swami that, you know, let us go through that entire journey and find that fulfillment which actually gives meaning to our existence. And we can only make that prayer to that mango tree and say that, let me be that mango, one of those lucky few which goes through.
Really, and with that prayer to our dear Swami, placing our gratitude at His lotus feet for this golden, beautiful, great opportunity to live and relive His wonderful leelas and stories, we thank all our listeners for being with us. And as always, any feedback, any question, whatever you wish to share, please do share with us. The email ID to do so is listener@radiosai.org. All your mails give us tremendous joy, inspiration, happiness. With this, we will leave you with this song. After which, you know, on the other side, you will be joined in by Brother Chandu with his segment Love to Love. With that, thank you. Jai Sairam.
Oh, ಕೌಸಲ್ಯಾನಂದನ ಪರಮಾನಂದ ಆನಂದ ರಾಮ.